Welcome to the Taming Tribulation Podcast. I am your host, Wyatt Hammond.
And I'm the co-host, Jeremy Crossley.
In this season, we are using biblical stories about trials and tribulations that characters have gone through, how they confronted them and overcame their own personal obstacles, so they can become the people that God uses for his purpose. Not perfect people, but imperfect people being used to do his will.
Our intention with these stories is to pass on to the listener the understanding that God uses the hardest and most difficult moments in our lives to refine us into the people we were meant to be.
By listening to these stories, we hope that you can be encouraged to see where God can use your tribulations for his purpose. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Taming Tribulation. I'm glad you could join us today, and we're continuing on in the story of Joseph. Today, we're in Genesis 42, and where we are in the story is Joseph is second in command to Pharaoh in all of Egypt. There's now a famine in the land of Egypt, all over the known world, and everyone is coming to Egypt to buy food. So in Genesis 42, we're starting at this point of the story where the setting is in Jacob's house, Joseph's father. It's him and his 11 brothers are all talking about where are we going to get food. So Jacob tells his sons, go to Egypt, buy grain there for us. Joseph has a brother named Benjamin, and he's the youngest brother. He's the youngest son of Jacob. When Jacob's sons went to Egypt to get the grain, Jacob didn't send Benjamin with them because he was afraid that Benjamin might be harmed on the trip. So an interesting part of the story here is Jacob obviously doesn't have trust for his sons, saying that he won't send the youngest with them because obviously he's already, in his mind, he thinks Joseph was killed by a wild animal. But this tells us that Jacob is obviously suspicious of the brothers for the disappearance of Joseph because he doesn't send Benjamin with them. If he was fully convinced that they had nothing to do with the disappearance of Joseph, then he would have no problem in sending Benjamin with them. What are the odds that he's going to get eaten by a wild animal too?
It shows his character. It talks about how he does have favoritisms, but he's too, I'll just be direct, he's too much of a coward to speak up and what he actually wants or what he's actually doing. And I think what it really what I try to understand is like, why didn't he tell his sons? You know, like he clearly has favoritism issues. He favorites his Benjamin over the other brothers. But he doesn't speak up. Like, this is things that are all internal within this.
You mean Jacob doesn't speak up?
Yeah.
Speak up to say what?
Speak up and say, like, I don't trust you guys. You know? Doesn't, like, guide them. Doesn't really do his part as a father to essentially put these guys in check. Because, like, he just keeps it in, right? And as anyone knows, like, if you keep information in, you keep something in, you know, it's going to show up somewhere else in your life, right? And I think he has a responsibility to, like, tell his sons, like, he doubts what they're trying to do, right?
Yeah, and that's clear in his actions. And I could imagine this isn't the first time that his mistrust of his sons has become clear, where they've wanted to do something. It's been 20 years since Joseph has disappeared. And this probably isn't the first time in those 20 years where Jacob has mistrusted his sons for the disappearance of Joseph. We've seen clear flaws in Jacob's fatherhood ability throughout this whole story, and there's still lots to come there. Okay, so right now, Joseph, as the governor of the land of Egypt, he's in charge of selling all the grain to everybody that comes. So anybody that comes to buy grain, Joseph sees firsthand. So Joseph's brothers go to Egypt to buy grain, and we're going to start reading here in verse 7. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. Where do you come from? He asked. From the land of Canaan, they replied, to buy food. Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Then he remembered his dreams about them and said to them, you are spies. You have come to see where our land is unprotected. No, my lord, they answered. Your servants have come to buy food. We are all the sons of one man. Your servants are honest men, not spies. No, he said to them, you have come to see where our land is unprotected. But they replied, your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with her father, and one is no more. Joseph said to them, It is just as I told you. You are spies, and this is how you will be tested. As surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of your number to get your brother. The rest of you will be kept in prison, for that your words may be tested to see if you are telling the truth. If you are not, then as surely as Pharaoh lives, you are spies. And he put them all in custody for 3 days. On the third day, Joseph said to them, Do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison, while the rest of you go and take back grain for your starving households. But you must bring the youngest brother to me, so that your words may be verified and that you may not die. This they proceeded to do. They said to one another, Surely we are being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That's why the distress has come on us. Reuben replied, Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood. They did not realize that Joseph could understand them, since he was using an interpreter. He turned away from them and began to weep, but then came back and spoke to them again. He had Simeon taken from them and bound before their eyes. When Joseph's brothers show up, why is he not immediately either full of vengeance or joy? Right? Well, like, why is it not automatically his response is, you bastards, you sold me into slavery. Hey guys, look, I'm second in command here. You effed up. You're all going to prison to be tortured for the rest of your lives because you sold me into slavery. Mm-hmm. Why is it not that right away? Or the alternative, why is it not, oh my gosh, I forgave you long ago, my brothers, I'm so happy to see you. Here's grain, where's our father? Big tears and joys and hugs. Like, why is it not one of those right away? Right? Why is it like, they don't recognize me. Okay, so I can play a game here.
He wants to see how they will respond. Like, he wants to see if they're worthy. He wants to see if they've changed, right? If they've changed their lifestyle, right? So it's probably like,
right,
I'm going to put them in this, I'm going to test them to see if they are still the people they think they are. Because remember, they don't know that he understands them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're probably talking amongst themselves, like, what are we going to do? Blah, blah, blah.
He's testing their loyalty to each other.
Yeah.
And seeing if they're still the kind of brothers that would sell sell each other out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Okay, great. All right, there's the answer. So Joseph's brothers are in prison for 3 days. And on the third day, Joseph comes back to them. And he changes the terms of the deal. And he says, instead of all of you staying in prison, if you're honest, I'll keep one of your brothers and the rest of you can go back and bring grain to your family. But then you have to bring your youngest brother back to me so that I know that he's alive. And then the brother that you left with me can go. So obviously that's a better deal for the brothers than all of them staying in prison. So they decide, okay, let's do that. So in verse 21, we see how the brothers are responding to this unfortunate series of events where there's a famine, as if that's not bad enough. So you have to go on a long journey just to get food. And then you get there and you're considered spies and they throw you in prison, you and all of your brothers. So now you're in a foreign land starving in prison and you can't get food back to your family. So it's a pretty dark circumstance. And right away, they say to one another, their first assumption is, we're being punished because of what we did to Joseph 20 years ago. We sold their brother into slavery. Do you know what that expression is? The rooster came home to croak or something?
No, I never heard
of it. Okay. So they're thinking what goes around comes around, and they automatically assume we're being punished for what we did to our brother. The one brother in the story that when Joseph was being sold into slavery, he said, let's not kill him. Let's sell him. So Reuben's the reason that Joseph's actually alive. And he says, didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood. They are all convinced we are in this predicament because of what we did. This is karma. This is God getting back at us. This is punishment. This is retribution. We were waiting for it. We knew we weren't going to die without this happening. We're done for. So that's the mindset of the brothers at this point. Jeremy, let's say you're Joseph in this situation. Because this is like, I mean, one of the most dramatic scenes in storytelling history where you're a long lost slave. Your family sold you into slavery. And 20 years later, now you're in this powerful position and they come back to you in a vulnerable state. and you have the power to make all their lives abundantly better or exact brutal punishment on everyone that you've ever wanted to. And they're right in front of you. You don't even have to go searching for them. You as a person, what would your reaction be in this situation? You've been stewing for 20 years. Are you thinking for 20 years, I cannot wait to get my vengeance? Or did you forgive them a long time ago and you're just waiting to reconcile with your brothers? Where's your mind at?
Well, I think I'd be similar to where Joseph is. I would want to see if my family actually changed. Like, would they still sell me for a pound of bread or whatever, you know what I mean? Or would they plead with me and show me mercy? You know, I think I would be in a similar situation. If I had the ability to control the outcome, I want to see if they've changed. You know, do they regret killing him? Or are they just saying this now because they're in trouble? So I think he's doing a great job trying to figure out what he would do, because there's both sides of him. There's a side of him that says, that probably is like, you guys wanted me dead, I want you dead. But there's also a side of him that's saying, oh, everything happened for a reason. I am who I am because of all these things. And he has compassion, but he does still want to see if they change. And I think that's the important part. 20 years later, are they capable of redeeming themselves? And I think that's what he's doing. So that's what I would do. I mean, it'd be hard. Like, the old Jeremy would have been like, you know, take the ones I loved and kill them. I mean, and keep them alive. And the ones I didn't love, I probably would have saved Reuben and Benjamin and killed everyone else. But
yeah,
now I would want to see if they change, you know? Mm.
Yeah. I think I'd be in the same state as a human. You're just like, I can't believe you guys did this to me. And that's the kind of thing where you'd be like, if you're a person that's been wronged at that level, I would imagine your sense or your desire for vengeance would be so strong that it's just a dream, right? Like, you just dream your whole life about being able to exact vengeance on somebody that did this to you. But then you actually get the opportunity. And thinking about something and actually having the opportunity to do it are two very different things. So for him to be in the position to have thought all that time about what I would do if I got my hands on them, right? On the first brother that suggested, let's just kill him.
Mm.
Let's just throw him in the pit. And for all the pain they made my father go through, I spent years in prison and being a slave and all these crazy things that had happened to me. And while you guys were hanging out on the farm, I was going through all this. Finally get the chance to get even. And you have the self-control and the godliness to say, maybe vengeance isn't the most important thing here, right? Mm. That's my first instinct probably is not the right one. Let's play this a different way. So I can admire Joseph for that decision, because the story could have ended right there. Joseph's brothers come to Egypt because there's a famine. He recognizes them, slaughters them all.
Off with their heads, right?
And now we're on to Exodus.
Yeah, but I think what's harder, and this is the thing that, like, people need to understand, what's more difficult is forgiving someone rather than passing vengeance on someone, right? Because you give that person an opportunity to change in that moment where they realize any and everybody has the rightful opportunity or the rightful feeling or whatever to kill someone and condemn someone for what they did. But Joseph's using this opportunity to show them that they can come back from who they were and be a better version of themselves by making a change, and a radical change. And he does that by testing them too. You know, I think it's a lot. I mean, I remember people have asked me, how do you essentially forgive the Taliban for, like, killing brothers and sisters overseas? And it's a lot harder to forgive someone who's done you wrong than it is to just wish death on them. But it's having compassion on people knowing that like something in their life somewhere got them to be to the level they were they're at. And I think that's the most important part here. And I think Joseph realizes that. And I think this gives the brothers the perfect opportunity to redeem themselves. And I think he's just hoping they actually take it, right?
Okay. So Joseph makes this new deal with them. He says, all of you can go back but one. So I have this one hostage. You can bring the food back and bring me back your younger brother. As the brothers were going back home, one of them looked into their pack and saw that the silver that he used to buy the grain had been returned. It had been put back in his sack. So he thought, they're going to think, the Egyptians think that we stole from them. So now they have our brother in prison, and now they think we're thieves. So in verse 29, it says, when they came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them. They said, the man who was lord over the land spoke harshly to us and treated us as though we were spying on the land. But we said to him, we are honest men. We are not spies. We were 12 brothers, sons of one father. One is no more, and the youngest is now with our father in Canaan. So the brothers are explaining to their father the situation. He's telling them that they're telling their dad, okay, we got the food, but we had to leave one brother behind because he didn't believe us. So we all came back, and now we have to take Benjamin back to Egypt so that we can prove that we didn't go there as spies and get our other brother out of prison. So in verse 35, it says, as they were emptying their sacks, there in each man's sack was his pouch of silver. When they and their father saw the money pouches, they were frightened. Their father Jacob said to them, you have deprived me of my children. Joseph is no more and Simeon is no more, and now you want to take Benjamin. Everything is against me. Then Reuben said to his father, you may put both of my sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Entrust him to my care, and I will bring him back. But Jacob said, my son will not go down there with you. His brother is dead, and he is the only one left. If harm comes to him on the journey you are taking, you will bring my gray head down to the grave in sorrow. So this part of the story really shows us the level of care that Jacob has for his youngest sons, for first Joseph and then Benjamin, where he knows I have one of my other sons, Simeon, is in prison and is dead unless Benjamin goes back, and he says, no, I'm not. You can leave him there. I'm not sending Benjamin with you. So that's his first response, is let Simeon stay. Benjamin's staying with me. He's not going anywhere. So Reuben says, okay, if I don't bring Benjamin back to you, you can kill two of my sons. So that might not be that's not a good deal for anybody. Like, it's not like if Jacob's not getting anything out of that, right? But it's the point is showing the level of that these brothers understand how important Benjamin is to him.
Well, I mean, I think Jacob is just really upset just in general about his youngest son dying, and then they want to take his now youngest son, and he just doesn't trust them. Like, he already had doubts about them before. That's why he kept Benjamin kept him home to begin with, right? And then he finds out one of his sons, Simeon, is in jail, and he just doesn't trust them. He doesn't trust what they think. So he's like, I'm not giving you any more of my sons. You know, in his head, he thinks already one of them is dead, and now the other one is in prison. So
he could actually be thinking, this is a ploy just to get Benjamin away from me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you already did this. I have suspicions you already did this with my first son. So you went to Egypt. I kept Benjamin with me, and now you come back and say, we have to bring Benjamin. Like, you're giving me an ultimatum. Either one other son dies or this one comes. And like, I can imagine his suspicion where he's like, so that's another thing this does for the father. The offer that Reuben makes is, Reuben says, so you know that I'm not tricking you. So you know that there's no deceit, that we're not trying to kill Benjamin out of jealousy. If I don't bring him back, you can kill my two sons. Like, that's a pretty good insurance.
Well, I mean, think about it too. They came back with they still had their silver, but then they had grain and one missing son. So they probably he probably thought they sold the son for grain. Sketchy. Just to survive. Yeah, of course.
Seriously. And now they're like, hey, we want to take your youngest son away. So of course he's suspicious, right? He'd be stupid not to be at this point.
Yeah. Looks pretty straightforward to me that they're it looks like they were setting up Simeon to sell him for grain and to keep the family alive, right? So like why would he
if I were Jacob, that's what I'd be thinking. Yeah, doesn't make any sense. How'd you come back with your money? Missing one brother and you have all this grain and now you're making up the story, but he's in prison and you need to take another son. Like, so it just wouldn't make sense.
And now he's like, but I think he's emotionally reacting now too, because he didn't actually open his mouth before about how he felt about it. But now since another son's gone and they're demanding to have the Benjamin come, it's like now he's just exploding onto his kids and saying, I don't trust you guys. And then it took, you know, Reuben to finally say, you know, I'll give you two of my own bloodline, like my own kids, your grandkids, if we don't come back. So it took him that extra step in order to try to provide that trust.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. He actually does blame them. It says it straight in 36. Their father said to them, you have deprived me of my children. Joseph is no more and Simeon is no more. So even if he buys the story of Joseph being torn by a wild boar or whatever it was, then he still is under the impression that this is your fault.
He's still bitter.
You deprived me of these kids. You, mm-hmm. Joseph, now the son that didn't come back and you want to take another. So yeah, it really makes sense when you look at it from that perspective of why Jacob would be so reluctant to give another son to the brothers that keep losing them.
Yeah. I mean, anyone else would have that same mentality, right? So he had to go, now Reuben had to go above and beyond to trust, to give his father trust, right? Because Reuben wasn't strong enough to stop his brothers to begin with, right? So that's the first thing to learn from this. And then his father was too weak to actually express how he was feeling about the fact that his youngest son is gone. And then on top of that, like, they're trying to get the trust of their father or regain trust of their father, but they didn't even know that they lost the trust, right? Mm-hmm. The father was deceitful about keeping Benjamin. And he's like, oh, I'm going to keep Benjamin here. But he didn't tell them why until they came back and noticed one of his sons was gone and that they need the other youngest. Yep. And then he lashed out onto them. And now they're like, whoa, clearly something has been going on here.
Yeah. That you don't trust us. I need to offer you my two sons.
Yeah. Yeah. That's collateral. I mean, we could think about that with any one of us. You know, imagine we have something wrong with someone and we just feel like if we speak up, it'll worsen the relationship rather than bettering the relationship, right? And what happens over time is it festers and it becomes bitterness. It becomes being upset. And then imagine if that same person does something to hurt you again in a similar type of way, you're going to react, right? Because you're like, I knew it. I knew you were deceitful. I know you were this. I knew you were that. And that's just like, it's not right, but it's human. And then it blows up. And now the repercussions could be so much worse for you and for the person you blow up on. So it's a great lesson in this to like really, as a father, as a person, be capable of communicating what your actual thoughts and feelings are. Obviously there's a way of doing it, but don't let it just sit inside your heart. And as a son, Reuben's, you know, lesson would be to stand up for your brothers, stand up for what's right, stand up for doing the right thing, right? And all the other brothers, I mean, their lessons just don't kill your brother, you know? But I think there's plenty of different storylines in this of what you can learn from it.
Okay, so we're ending this episode in Genesis 43 and continuing on next week with Taming Tribulation. Thanks for listening, everybody.